Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. 20 years ago, the primary pieces of the International Space Station were delivered and assembled in space, starting the groundwork of nearly continuous human presence in space. The station has since grown into an impressive research complex that continues to model not just international cooperation, but also research that can help solve problems in space and on Earth. Astronomy contributor Gene Creighton joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to celebrate and reflect on 2 decades of the International Space Station.
Gene Creighton, welcome back to Lake Effect.
Hello, Audrey.
So we are celebrating 20 years of humans on the International Space Station, and obviously it looks a lot different now than when it was originally constructed. A lot more has been added. So what did the original ISS look like when people first went up there?
The International Space Station has had several modules added to it to allow for more people on the International Space Station, more countries involved, and opportunities for more impact, let's put it that way.
And a main function of this is to house people from all different nations to not only study space, of course, but it has helped in studying people themselves.
Probably every little bit as much. One of our goals, I mean, this has been an experiment to see how people do in space. Right. So for 20 years, we've been studying what happens to the human body outside of a normal gravitational field. And we found that there are a lot of, what to say now, difficulties, issues. I don't know what the correct word we want to use is, but certainly it impacts the human body. And probably what we noticed first, most dramatically, is what happens to the bones. So quickly, people realized that it's something crazy, like every month you spend in space, you lose about 1% of your bone mass. So this is an unacceptable situation if you live in space for, say, years. So one of the ways that people combated that was to do exercise. A lot of strenuous exercise. So basically to compensate for the fact that on Earth, we do weight training all the time because we're always fighting against gravity, even when we're sleeping, and you simply don't have that. So the current regimen is 2 hours a day, rain or shine, regardless, you do 2 hours a day, and that helps. If you think about that, what we take for granted on Earth, it's kind of mind-boggling. They also found that a slightly reduced salt diet helps as well. And the hope is that what we learn from this process will help people with osteoporosis on Earth to find, you know, effective treatments to help people who suffer from this bone loss, especially older women. So I'm always intrigued by the connections that we make from things we can try in space that have direct implications for solutions on Earth.
That reminds me, the name of the astronaut escapes me, but someone mentioned earlier this year, like, even though we know it's in chaos, it looks the same as we're up here looking down. And that bird's eye view, and as you mentioned, the potential to help people battling osteoporosis, but the ISS can also assist with aid on Earth because it has that unique perspective. Could you get into that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. The ISS, apparently, they use reasonable cameras from the cupola where it's basically a glass. It almost looks like a glass dome looking downward. And they can take pictures that look as if you took them from an airplane. They really are high-resolution images. So, for example, they can see a flooded area. Where is the water really? Because you get, as you say, that bird's eye view. You can see where the problems are, where the help is needed. And I guess this has been used for floods and for the wildfires in California, to see how are they going to coordinate the the effort of getting the fire under control. So that that was very helpful because, frankly, the fires were so out of control that you wouldn't want, say, a helicopter or anything too close to fly nearby to take those pictures. The ISS, happily, is far enough that you could safely take those images.
Right. It's the kind of the ultimate form of backup, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So in a place where, you know, humans are essentially living on this space station for prolonged periods of time, you know, I believe Scott Kelly holds the NASA record for 342 days is the longest mission up there. How are they balancing how to not contaminate spaces where humans just simply don't exist?
You know, that's an interesting and tricky question because we've tried all kinds of different decontaminants. So let's bake it, let's freeze it, let's radiate it, let's throw acid on it, you know, on different things that people have touched. And we find that some bacteria persevere. Some bacteria will hold on, even in space. So there are certain classes of bacteria that we have decided if we find them somewhere, chances are we brought them with us. We did not find this. We couldn't assume that we found them. Now, for the Perseverance mission that they just sent to Mars, since we're looking explicitly for ancient life on Mars or possibly even current life on Mars, people have worked very hard to clean all the pieces of equipment that were going to be used to take the sample and hopefully eventually bring it back to Earth. But as I said, it's really hard to make sure that some of those hardy bacteria are actually not going to survive whatever it is that we throw at it. So that is a question. What's interesting also about putting people in the ISS when you really can't open the window is that there is an issue of accumulation of different kind of funguses, different kind of things that you kind of have to scrub clean and, you know, hope for the best. The air there gets eventually probably not so great. That's the fact of the matter.
Right. And this model is really just the ultimate show of planning and prepping and adjusting and also of sustainability and engineering. Because as you've mentioned before, you know, things are different in space. Physics, the laws of physics here are not the same on the International Space Station. So they've really had to adapt to
the circumstances, right. So I, one of my kind of amusing stories is when an Italian astronaut joined the ISS, this was the first Italian, I mean, life could not be imagined without an espresso, right? That just wasn't part of the possibilities. So one of the companies that make espresso machines made a specific machine that would work in a gravity-free, well, a microgravity environment. And it was a proof of concept because all other coffee makers assume that gravity is going to assist in making sure the liquids move a certain way. And it turns out actually that in microgravity, that is a real issue of how engines work without requiring fluid moving from, quote, up to down. That's not well defined in space. There is no up and no down. So anyway, I think these kind of problems that might sound trivial are actually very important in how all engines, all machines work in space. So it gives us insight that helps us understand something about the nature of how machines work. I love some images I've seen of how fire is different in space. That we're used to seeing, you know, a candle burning, you get all these cool colors, there's a particular, very particular shape and color gradient. And when you see it in space, it's very underwhelming. There's a perfectly circular ghost-like arc and a very faint bluish, purplish color right at where the fire is, and that's it. And you think, wow, But it's that whole idea that gravity and the dynamics of how the gas moves, the air moves, makes fire very, very different. Now, in terms of sustainability, the International Space Station had to solve a very fundamental problem, and that is, how are you going to have water? Because if you had to bring with you all the water that all these people would need over the years, I suspect it just wouldn't be a feasible situation. The expense would be too tremendous. So they had to figure out how to recycle all the water that came in. And I think their success rate is very high. And the water that comes out of their reclaimer, let's call it, the efficiency is very high. You have to take, of course, urine and sweat and all of it, and you super clean it, and that water is very high value, very high quality, and the technology has been used in places on Earth where clean water is very hard to come by, which is in and of itself, again, a wonderful development, a wonderful innovation that could make a big difference to people on the planet who are needing safe, clean water.
Yeah, and it really gives you a different perspective on things that we may take for granted or see as trivial, like having coffee every day or having access to clean water. And also the fact that this is an international space station. You know, it's not one jurisdiction, not one country. It's a collaborative effort, and a lot of countries around the world are all doing their own work and research. So to you, what does having the ISS and have it be going strong for 20 years mean and symbolize?
Well, it warms my heart, actually, that so many countries can sustain a commitment to the International Space Station, which is a place of research primarily, right? That's primarily its point. But also the idea that we can set aside whatever differences we might have and figure out how to solve problems, not only for better living in space, but also better living on Earth. I think that is a wonderful message to leave us with.
Definitely. Well, Jean, thank you so much, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Me too, Audrey. Thanks so much.
Lake Effect contributor Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium on the UW-Milwaukee campus. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you can explore all of her past segments at wuwm.com.